Hatterly, back there, who is distributing all the information.
Thanks, Cindy. It's a pleasure for me to be with you today. And I thought, first of all, I'd try to paint a picture of what we're doing so that you can decide whether you want to stay or not. So when herbs come into your mind, I've thought that maybe you could think of different things. So this could be in two major categories. This could be culinary herbs, oregano and thyme and basil and those kind of things which enhance your cooking, right? Or they could be medicinal herbs. So I want to point out right at the beginning that we have focused on medicinal herbs. The company that we have, we are an herbal manufacturer, meaning that we take plant materials and for the most part we turn them into, you can't call it medicine, that's taboo, you can't call it medicine, but things that people take to alternative medicine, let's call it that. So that's been our focus, is medicinal herbs and medicinal herbal products. But as you can well guess, when you grow a plant, the plant doesn't care whether it's going to be something that's going to enhance a dish on your stove or whether you use it to treat some ailment that you may have. Also, as I listened to Joel Salatin speak this morning, I was thinking, because he was talking about this synergistic symbiotic relationship. And when it comes to the herb business, our herb business is an established, I will say, profitable business. It's working, okay? And we could have stopped there. We could have just said, okay, we've arrived, or, well, not necessarily arrived, but it is a business that's working, and especially an agricultural business that's working. We're making money at it. So we could have stopped there, but I'm with Joel. I want to take my whole farm, and I want to make this much more than just a part of it that's an herbal business. I want to see if I can make this more synergistic, more symbiotic, and continue this process. So you'll see that as we talk about this today. So the original thing was from dairy farm to herb farm. Maybe this is a little more accurate. Okay, so in other words, we're trying a lot of different things. And a lot of it is a big experiment. And a lot of it's not making any money. But I feel like we want to include especially more animals. If you grow a lot of plants, over time at least, that would require probably some inputs, some fertilizer, or at least being really good with compost, which in our climate gets kind of tough. So one of my focuses is to get more animals on the farm so that we can have that cycle that's a little more natural. So yes, I started off at an early age on the dairy farm, and I guess you could say the rest is history. Typical dairy operation in Star Valley, Wyoming. If you go back 50 years, there were probably over 400 dairies in Star Valley. Today there's probably less than 10, and they're going away quickly. Soon that will be in the history books only. It's, as you can imagine, it's difficult to operate a dairy at 6,000 feet in the mountains where you have 2 months to grow the hay and 10 months to feed it. It's a difficult lifestyle, and most people just aren't that tough anymore. In 1950, my dad built a new barn, and this was back in the 1950s when they were building that barn. And 10 years ago, this is what it looked like. It was pretty much abandoned. We weren't milking cows any longer, and it was, as what happens on farms, it gets filled full of junk and not used much. The amazing thing about this barn is it was well constructed, so it was still in good shape. So with a lot of hard labor, this is a concrete stanchion here, all these, and a sheet stuff. I busted that all out by hand, I'll say. And we turned it into a commercial kitchen and an herb manufacturing place. And I can still walk in that barn and still picture what it used to be, where the cows were, how it smelled, all that kind of stuff. But then I look at this and go, oh, something has changed. And then, so we manufacture over 200 different herbal products. These are some of the tinctures. We manufacture some salves. We manufacture lip balms and natural insect repellent and all different kinds of things. And then we also have a little on-farm store, which is constantly evolving. People are, you know, they come in and they want different things. And most of all, they want you to heal them. So one of the implications of if you get into an herbal business, you need to be prepared of people going, oh, it hurts here. What do I do? Okay? And you probably should be prepared to say more than I don't know, because they want to know. And the amazing thing is that you will learn, again, if you have an interest with regard to herbs, you'll learn that there are simple things that work quite effectively for a number of different things. So that's been a fun learning thing for me, is to part of this herbal business that kind of pushes you along, because the people want to know from very simple things to very complex things what the alternative healing opportunities are.
Do you use a lot of like reference books and stuff?
Yeah, I brought some of the books, and obviously I just brought a handful, but books have basically taught me. Books, conferences, you can buy these courses that you can listen to, and so I've listened over and over and over again to these tapes, these lecture series, these conferences, and yeah, it's slowly sinking in. So yeah, so this is an industry or an area that you can be self-taught in my opinion, to a large degree. And then we took the traditional alfalfa and grass hay and barley, which is about the only two commercial crops that you can grow in Star Valley just because of our climate, and we started doing weird things. This is Highway 89 right here. So I told people that we were providing free entertainment. You know, we were putting things out there they had never seen before. Row crops. Wow. Yeah, my wife can tell a story when she drove a truck through a blizzard to Wheatland, Wyoming, and picked up some row crop equipment, because there are no row crops in Star Valley, okay? So, yeah, this has all been new and different. You know, putting up greenhouses or high tunnels or cold frames, whatever you want to call them, and starting to grow different things, figuring out what works, what doesn't. So when it comes to herbs, it's fun to start making lists, because you may think of herbs as specialty kinds of things. Well, what it boils down to, herbs are really just weeds. So the things that most people want to spray and kill are the things that I'm not looking for most of the time. So in our local area, so in Star Valley, for example, here's some of the plants that just grow wild that we can pick for free, for the most part. And some of those you probably heard of, and some of you may not have heard of. Some of them need mountains to grow in. So in other words, they may not grow in your area. But arnica is our number one product. We make an arnica product that's our number one seller, and we sell a lot of it. And it's got a good reputation, and people really appreciate how it works and helps them. So, we don't grow one plant of arnica on our property. It's all wild harvested in the mountains. And so this year I learned a new lesson, is for whatever reason, the arnica was not very abundant this year. Up until this year, the mountains were loaded full of it. You didn't have to look or hunt or anything. A mile from our farm in the mountains, the arnica was just growing there like crazy, and you just go get it, and it wasn't an issue. This year, the plants were there, but it wasn't blooming. We had plenty of rain early on. It was similar, it seemed like to me, a similar season to last year, but the arnica just did not bloom this year as much. So, live and learn. We may run out of arnica, and our arnica is processed fresh. So come about February or March, I don't know what I'm going to do if I run out of arnica because we're going to have some unhappy customers.
That's good for bruising, isn't it?
Arnica? It's good for bruising, uh-huh. And it's good for soreness. So we call it arnica sports rub. So if you've exercised or been skiing or whatever your activity was, horseback riding, and you hurt, it really helps with the soreness of muscles.
So you use this topical?
Yes, topical. Yes, good question. Arnica internally, for those of you that know, you have to be really careful with. It has the paralizidine alkaloids that can screw up your liver if you're not careful. So, yeah. And isn't that interesting? Something that's so effective topically is toxic internally in very much of a dose at all. There are probably people that have an expertise level that could administer arnica internally, but I don't recommend it because I'm not at that point.
I take the pills when I get bruised.
It's probably the homeopathic.
Oh, yeah, okay, the homeopathic.
Yeah, now see, homeopathic's a whole different ball game.
Oh, okay.
Ball of wax. Yeah, because that's homeopathic, so that's different, and that's fine.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Somebody's figured that out. I don't think they've killed anybody with the homeopathic arnica yet. So yeah, that's a different deal. But
so
I'm talking between the homeopathic. Homeopathics, anybody want to define homeopathics? Somebody may be more of an expert on homeopathics than I am.
I'd call it more of an energy medicine.
Homeopathics use a different form of treating life with life. So a simple example would be onions. Cutting onions makes you cry. If you were having some runniness from your eyes and your nose, you would treat with a homeopathic dilution of onion. So any homeopathic remedy is diluted to such an extent that any toxicity that it may have is going to be ineffective. Which you could also use as an argument against homeopathy, but if you've used homeopathic medicine, like I have, I think it's very effective.
And also, my understanding of homeopathic is it's also based on a dilution. They have 500x or 1000x or whatever, and so literally you're diluting the whatever it is, the constituent or the thing, hundreds if not thousands of times, and so that changes the whole dynamic of what happens in your body with that. So, as compared to taking arnica, putting in an alcohol, and then taking a dropper full of that would that would be bad. So, yes.
When you were talking about gathering these herbs and you said it was a mile from your farm, does that mean it's off your farm on somebody else's land?
It's on the forest, actually.
So do you have to get permits for that?
I've tried. They don't know what to do with people like me. You want to what? You want to pick flowers in the forest? Yes, we do have a permit for that. But go talk to this person. And after you've talked to the fifth person, you decide, well, maybe they really don't care. So I don't try to get the permits anymore. And if there's usually when I talk, the last time I talked in front of a group, I got in trouble at the state level. Let's see, it was to do with this one right here. So those of you that are aware, this is considered a noxious weed in the state of Wyoming. Okay, so when I start talking about I've got three flats of St. John's wort growing in my greenhouse, Cheyenne was calling me a couple of days later. All right, so I was naive. I'm not trying to grow noxious weeds, okay, and I didn't, by the way, because obviously people had a conversation with me about that. But it was not on our Lincoln County noxious weed list, and I thought that's how naive I was. I thought that was the end of the story. I didn't know there was a state noxious weed list that it was on. Okay? Any other questions or comments about any of these things?
I forgot dandelion. That's really prevalent.
Yes, yes.
And mullein.
Yes. That's probably on one of these other lists.
Smoked it?
No, we also rubbed
homes.
Smoked dandelion?
Oh, mullein.
It's getting interesting.
Okay, so as this list continues to grow because we continue to try different plants that we're growing, yes?
Is there a website how you would process them to make these medicinal herbs usable?
I'm sure there are websites that give you instructions on how to process herbs. And here, I'll show a couple books that would be really good. Here's the Herbal Medicine Maker's Handbook. This is a really good one because he talks about not only tinctures, but all different kinds of forms of herbal products. Poultices and fomentations and tinctures and salves and I can't think, but there's a bunch that he has in here. This is a good one. James Green is the author. And then another really good one is Making Plant Medicine by Rico Check. And he lives out kind of in herbal Mecca out there in Oregon where all these different companies operate. And he also sells herb seeds. So if you want to try to grow some of your own weeds, you can get some from him.
What was his name again?
Rico Check, C-H-E-C-E-C-H. So these are both good books on, if you just want to make something at home just for a hobby, or if you really want to get into it, because this is how we make our herbal products is how they explain it in these books.
So is there any type of regulation on that? I mean, as far as labels, what do you have to do?
Yes. To make herbal products, you're going to run into two things quickly. Herbs fall under the dietary supplements, which is part of FDA. Okay? So, again, in our part of the world, the local inspector didn't quite know what to do with us. And so he comes in and does his normal inspection, and it didn't become too detailed. The problem is occasionally the FDA will call him up and say, we need to go around to the people that are doing these weird things like making herbal products. And then he comes with them, and the FDA guy wants to know what's going on and does a much more formal, detailed inspection. And then on top of that, for those of you that are in the know, I don't even know what it's called, but they passed 3 years ago a much higher level of requirements. So now we have to have SOPs stand for Standard Operating Procedures. So I've collaborated with a group of like 10 other herbalists because we're so small, because this is such an onerous task. I mean, we're going to have a book this thick by the time we're done, but we have to document how we do all of this stuff, how we process all of this stuff, and it's by law now that we have to do this. Standard operating procedures. So anyway, yeah. And the other big part of that is because we use so much alcohol, we buy 55-gallon drums of 190-proof alcohol. So, the country western song's talking about the big party down. we could have one of those because we've got enough alcohol, but that's highly regulated. So then you get into the tobacco firearms group of people. And so when we buy a 55-gallon drum of alcohol, it costs us, $300 or $400 for the alcohol, but it costs us $1,200 for the tax on that alcohol. What's that? Yeah. Now you get most of that back, not all of it, but you have to do all the paperwork. And see, a guy like me doesn't like to do that stuff, but I want to get most of my $1,200 back, so I do that. So you've got these things that that make it not as fun as it could be. All right, but anyway, we're growing more and more things all the time. I need to take that one off the list. but it's really fun. We grew a whole pretty row of California poppies this spring, and not only was it great product, fresh product, so we could make good California sedative, if those of you that know what California poppy is good for, but it was beautiful. You know, it was really pretty. No. My calendula was in a greenhouse, and it was kind of a weed in that greenhouse because it's self-seeded and all that kind of stuff. But it could, so you'd have to be a little diligent about getting all the dead heads off before fall, or they are going to self-seed. But no, really haven't, so... I do not of these lists. I do not. I have some business cards up here, or give us a call, whatever, and I'll provide you with whatever lists or information that you need. I was just going to mention, so as Joel Salatin talks about making money, we've raised alfalfa for years, and we've sold some alfalfa hay for, between $70 and $110 a ton over the years. And we make, I think, good alfalfa hay, good horse hay that people would want. But if you turn that into an herb and you calculate what you're getting there for alfalfa, it's more like $2,000 a ton. So obviously we're not selling 20 tons of it. We're just using pounds of it, but it's a total different product. So, same thing with oats. We can grow oats for the horses, or you can harvest it in what's called the milky stage and turn it into a tincture that people will pay, $12 for a 1 ounce bottle of it for. So, just different ways of going about it. And then native plants. So here's the dandelion on the native plant. So this is a list of plants that grow naturally on the farm. We haven't planted. We don't promote them. We don't cultivate them. We don't do anything. They just exist. So we've got things like dandelion that pretty much everyone has. We have things like chokecherries. And then we have things like toadflax, which I think is a noxious. I think it's a noxious weed. We don't have a big problem with toad flax, mainly because I'm on the lookout for it, and I harvest it and keep it kind of under control. But it's a great remedy. It's kind of like a milk thistle. It's a liver remedy, and so even just on our 100 acres, we have this many different things that just grow in the wild that we can just harvest. We have a handful of hawthorn bushes, and they produce an abundance of either hawthorn flowers and or berries, and that is truly a spectacular remedy for the cardiovascular system. Hound's tongue, there's another one on the noxious weed list, at least in Lincoln County. We don't make that into anything that you take internally, but we do have a formula that's for a liniment, an external product that some people like. I don't know what to do here. I have slides of some of these plants that we can go through and talk about some of their herbal qualities if you're interested in that. Okay, so I'm seeing some nodding heads, so we'll do that. I'm going to move through quickly because I've got a number of them. All right, so we'll do this in a quiz format. You tell me what these are, and if you want to go that far, you can tell me what it is, the scientific name.
Don't
want to go that far? Okay. All right. Okay. Yes. Okay, what's his common name? Very good. Okay. That's the family. And when I set this up, I was doing this in Lincoln and Teton County, so I put the number of species on there just because it's kind of interesting to know whether there's one, or in the case of willows, which we'll get to in a minute, there's more than one. We'll see if you can guess how many. Cherry's a great, it's just a good, great cough medicine. Okay, so if you haven't tried a cherry, so antitussive. So I've got some jargon in here. Okay, antitussive is stops coughing. And if you haven't tried a cherry product, especially for your kids when they're coughing, try it. It's a great remedy. This will be a big, that's a toughie. Yeah, and if you want to get that in depth into what grows in Wyoming and the number of species, I don't have the book with me, but the definitive book on plant botany in Wyoming is, wow, it's by Dorn. Yes, Vascular Plants of Wyoming. Wow, couldn't even think of the title. Thank you. I've worn it out, but I can't tell you what it's called. Vascular Plants of Wyoming by Robert Dorn. Okay, let's see if anybody knows this one. Nope. The color is in the name. Oh, okay. We make a formula, it's called Goldenrod Eye Bright, and it's a great remedy for allergies. The thorns give this one away. Okay. This plant has been clinically trialed and is a proven cardiovascular tonic. It's, if you've got any heart conditions, this is a plant you should learn about. Okay, very good. And speaking of horsetail, this may seem silly to you, but I found a formula in a book. I didn't make it myself, and I put together a tooth and gum powder. The horsetail in here is the scouring, the part that scrubs your teeth clean, but this to me is almost a miracle product. I have had bleeding gums probably all my adult life, and I don't know that that's anything due to what I'm doing or eating or not doing or brushing or flossing or whatever, but when I use this product, I do not have bleeding gums. And that to me is a miracle. I mean, because to always be spitting blood in the sink after you brush your teeth just doesn't seem quite right. And this has astringents in it, which tighten up your gums and it keeps your gums healthy. Plus, it has no chemicals, no preservatives, no fluoride, no anything. And I love that product.
So you use that as a toothpaste?
Yes, this is my toothpaste. Now, if I have each of you in this room try this for toothpaste, I would dare say that most of you couldn't take it because it's a green powder. It's not Crest, all right? It's a green powder. It's like sticking ground up alfalfa on your toothbrush. It's a little weird, okay? But
now just horse tail. There's no horse.
Yeah, it's green. It's not brown. It's green. But I'm used to it, and now what I had to learn to do was to clean out the sink when I was done, because it made quite a mess in the sink. But as long as I do that, then we're okay. I've been using this probably over a year, but a year and a half, probably something like that. But if I had to go back to toothpaste, it would kill me because this really works. And if you're interested, the ingredients are on here, so you can come and see it, make it yourself. And see, it says here it's a diuretic. We're not even talking about the scouring capability of it. Do you guys have this in your part of the world? Where you get we call them burrs when I was a kid. You get them all over you? Downstone. Yep. This is one of my favorites because it's such a wonderful remedy. It's a wonderful respiratory remedy. Mullein, especially in our climate, we live in a dry climate, mullein is moisturizing. So if you have a dry cough, mullein is a specific for that. And it's tremendous. Plus you can use it for herbal toilet paper. Yes. Yeah, the part that can be used, the leaves or the flowers or the root, they all have a little bit different properties. But the flowers up here, the head doesn't mature, you know. The flowers mature independent, so anywhere on that spike. And that becomes problematic for harvesting because you can't just chop it off at some point. You'd have to pick individual flowers. You don't see the flowers very often. People aren't willing to invest that much energy and time into getting the flowers. So usually they just chop the whole head off and grind it up and they call it flowers, but that's technically not the flowers. Not a very good photo here. Nettles is very nutrient dense. So when you're taking nettles, it's giving you nutrition, good minerals and vitamins. The problem with nettles in our country, it's very drying. So if you take it very long, it'll dry you out. So anybody recognize that? Yes, plantain. It's a very versatile plant. Almost any kind of a wound situation. And the nice thing about plantain is it pretty much just grows everywhere. And so if you're hiking and you get a mosquito bite, you can rub it on a mosquito bite and it'll give you relief there. It's good for burns. It's good for scratches. It's good internally for all different kinds of conditions. Yep, almost any kind of skin condition. It's a great versatile plant. Okay, this is, I'll just mention something different here. The poplar buds, so in the winter time when the buds are looking like that, they have a resin on them, so they're kind of sticky, kind of resiny, the buds. The extract of that, based on what I've read, is at least one of what they call the balm of Gilead, the poplar buds, and that is a great expectorant. What's this? Roses? Yep. Yep, so it's a good vitamin C source. Anybody recognize the characteristic leaf? Yes, shepherd's purse, okay. If I had to say the worst tasting herb, tincture that we have, this is it. It's disgusting, really. I mean, most of them are bad. This one's really bad. I'm not sure quite why. I don't know this plant's scope in Wyoming. I don't know where it grows. Mostly, probably more in the mountains. Any guesses? It's a relative to OSHA.
Sweet.
Yes, very good. I grew up as a kid. A whole bank of this grows along the south side of my parents' house. My mom called it a licorice plant because it smells like licorice, tastes like licorice.
Yep. There are places in Lincoln County where there's whole fields of this, where it's kind of taken over, you know, because it can be a very problematic, noxious weed. On my farm, I just have little patches of it, and I let them be because I like to have a source of it, but I harvest it. Anybody recognize this one? Yes, wild lettuce, very good. When people come in and they're looking for something to help them sleep, I'm going, you know, I'll usually recommend one of our formulas, but I go, the herbal world is full of sedatives. I don't know why that is, but there's a lot of them. And so if one doesn't work, you've got a bunch more to try. and most of them are pretty effective. Any guesses on how many species of willow grow in Lincoln County or Teton County?
30.
You're close.
Wow.
How about Teton County? You wouldn't know there'd be that much difference in neighboring counties, but for some reason Teton County has us beat. So willow is in the Salicaceae family. What product comes from the willow family that everybody knows about?
Aspirin.
Yep. So the precursor for aspirin comes from willow. So in theory, if you wanted to get a natural aspirin type product, you could just chew on a willow branch.
Does it matter what species you choose? I know they used to say white willow bark. 41 species, one better than another?
Not that I know of. Yeah, not that I know of. We use white willow to make our tincture out of, and that may be more or just tradition rather than based on any content of salicylic acid, but I don't know that for sure. Yarrow? Yeah, so here's a plant that could be used for, you could grow it and cut it off and process it fresh. You can process it dry, either make a tincture out of it or make a tea out of it. You can grow it as an ornamental. You can use it as a cut flower. You know, you can use this plant several different ways. So we live in the mountains. We live at 6,000 feet. Those of you that have been to Star Valley know what I'm talking about. We have water isn't a problem. We have plenty of water. So our number one challenge as far as growing anything is our climate, because we have a short growing season. And so we have to use all the tricks that we can think of for season extension. All right, from starting plants indoors. Now, a lot of this doesn't necessarily apply to herbs, because herbs are, again, mostly weeds. So they're the toughest of the tough, and they're going to do quite well on their own. But once you start getting it out into vegetables and or flowers, then you have to be a little more particular about what you're doing. So I'm just going to go through some of the things that I use for season extension. And a lot of this has worked quite nicely. We have materials and methods that are available to us today, like Joel was saying, that weren't available, you know, that long ago. They just weren't available. So here's our starter greenhouse, and we use, before we had just one layer of plastic over it, and this year I put two layers over it and blew it up, if you know what I'm talking about. That's really nice, especially because I can leave this on year-round. The snow does pile up on it, but it's okay. It won't cave it in, and the wind doesn't flap it, because I've got that double layer and the wind and it's blown up. So I like this a lot. Now, most of our greenhouses or high tunnels don't have this, but I like it on this small one because I can then leave the poly on all year long.
Do you get too hot during the summer like that?
I have a fan in there that's not a thermostat. So, and I put shade cloth on it in the summertime. If I didn't have both of those, yes. And it still gets plenty hot, but the shade cloth, yeah. What I found is the smaller structure you have, the more concerned you have to be about heat buildup. The larger high tunnels, the ones that are 12 feet tall, there's more room for the heat to move around and get out of there, whereas if it's only this tall, you know, 5 minutes of full sun and you're cooking in there. So that's been my experience. The smaller it is, the more careful you have to be with heat buildup. And in March, when we're trying to get things started, so I start things under those lights, and I can just do that inside the barn, not in a greenhouse at all, just under those lights. But so, when you go from a flat that's taking up this much space, and then you transplant those out, and it's going to take a whole table full to lay those out, you can see that you quickly expand your need for space. So we move into this double poly, the starter greenhouse, which is 16 by 32, I believe. And instead of heating the whole thing, and you might be able to see a heater down here or not, I just have a little propane heater in there. It's not vented, but it's high efficiency, so it doesn't put off a lot of bad gas or anything like that. I've got these benches, and I just stacked them up and threw some plastic over them, and it worked beautifully. Used very little heat. Kept a nice environment without costing an arm and a leg to keep the greenhouse heated during, you know, when it was still getting zero outside, for example. And then we have this ongoing experiment. Well, we started this last year, but I bought a coal boiler to actually use in our home because we put hydronic heating in the floor of our home. But I wanted to use that to see if I could heat the greenhouses. This greenhouse behind, you can see, that's a bigger one. That's 30 by 100. And what we did is we put PEX pipe in the soil. And we set up a situation where the coal boiler heats the water, and then we run it through. And this was before it was completed, so the tubing isn't hooked up. But we run it through a kind of an automated system. So we have thermostats with wires that go out into the soil. They monitor the soil temperature. And when the soil temperature gets to a certain point, it turns on the valve and starts circulating the hot water. Just like it's a hydronic system for your home, only it's in the soil. If you understand that concept in your home, you'd understand how this works here. And it worked very nicely, very nicely. Now this is getting away from herbs a little bit, but we wanted to focus on broccoli production this spring for Jackson Hole Grocer. They wanted to buy, we kind of committed to try and provide broccoli for them this year. And so we started broccoli, and I harvested broccoli on June 1st. A nice big head of broccoli by using this system. And so, my point is by having an additional heat source and then the structure, the high tunnel, and heating the soil. We're not heating the whole big greenhouse. We're just heating the soil and then using some row covers. Do y'all know what row covers are? You'll see a picture of them here shortly, I believe. But that seemed to work. In fact, I've gone so far as to say that in our climate, the number one thing that you can do for season extension is to have some type of poly structure, high tunnel, greenhouse, whatever you want to call it, and then inside that structure have row cover. It's kind of like a double layer, and it really works. And then on top of that, we're heating the soil a little bit, and I'm finding that that really works. Wow, that's a perfect lead up to this slide right here. So this high tunnel, when we bought it, it had plastic ends, all right, with zippers in it. Any of you have one of these? What's that?
1 month.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't take long. And we're not in what's considered the windy part of Wyoming. All right? But those plastic ends did not last. And so now this was manufactured by our local truss company. He just built a truss. I just gave him the dimensions and he built a truss. And so this literally was hauled to our place that looked just like that. I just stood it up. Yeah, it has a door here, a big 4x8 door, and we just hooked it on. And that has really, that's been very good. That works well. And I don't have the slides in here, but the previous year, the wind came along and just about took me to Torrington on a ride with this thing because it had almost lifted the whole one side right out of the ground. So I concreted in some of these things. And I think you almost have to. Have you, any of you had experience with that? Do you have to concrete them down?
Well, the extension built a high tunnel on our property. This year we had 85 mile an hour gusts. But we did the Casper one last year. It's still there. It hasn't been built something from Jacobs this much. They didn't concrete it.
Okay, but they did use some anchors of sorts. Yeah. Yeah. So if you're going to put up a high tunnel, I would make sure that you anchor it somehow.
We concreted ours this year.
Yeah. That is a really bad feeling. My wife and I have been out there hanging onto the post going, I hope we don't go, you know. Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad feeling, and I didn't want to have that feeling anymore. I just took these pictures just last week, and so this is just to give you an idea of what it looks like in the field. What I don't like about this production, I have a lot of bare dirt around here, so either my spacing is too great or I need to put some kind of cover crop in there or something. I just don't like that much bare dirt. It's an invitation for a lot of weeds, as you can imagine. So I'm trying to figure that out. Anybody recognize that? We have a customer in New York City that buys 8 ounces of this probably every other month. And from a tincture standpoint, that's a lot of tincture for one person. But she says it has saved her life. She has some kind of liver condition. So, you know, I mean, you get people and they really appreciate what you can do for them. I think that's a mint. And then I wanted to mention that I did invest in 3 pieces of equipment that really are working nicely. This is a bed shaper. I drove to New York State to pick this thing up. Again, they don't make these in Wyoming. They probably make them in California or somewhere, but this makes a bed. It makes a bed 44 inches, and it's totally adjustable. You can make it do whatever you want it to do, but 44 inches wide, and you can go from, I don't know, 4 inches to probably 10 inches high. And so then it also has the drip tape attachments on here, and so as you go along, it'll shape the bed and put the drip tape right into the ground, right into the bed. Buckeye Tractor Company in Columbus Grove, Ohio. Yeah, so they make it in Ohio, but I drove to New York to get it. It was used. Got a good deal on it. So I now have 2 more pieces of equipment from Buckeye Tractor. And this one is a mulch layer. So after I've made my bed, this goes along and it puts the plastic mulch over that raised bed. I would prefer not to use plastic, but my limitation is labor. I just can't stay on top of the weeds. I just can't do it by myself or with the 2 or 3 people that we have doing this. So in a minute, you'll get to see what the end result of all of this equipment was. But there's a learning curve to these pieces of equipment, okay? But once you get it figured out and this was good, but by far the best of all of these pieces of equipment was this baby. Do you know what that is? This holds water, and there's a wheel right down here that the water goes into, and this is where your hired hand sits. These were all the plants go. It's called a water wheel planter. And you hook that on your tractor, and you open up the valve, and this wheel goes around. If you're going over the plastic mulch, it's punching a hole in the plastic, and the person sitting back here is just sticking a plant in that watered hole. You can plant a lot of plants in an hour with that machine, as compared to somehow getting on your knees and poking a hole or digging a hole and going along. So in a minute, again, you'll get to see, what's that? We have about three as far as herbs, flowers, and vegetables, okay? Yeah. And so that's the end result. I took that picture just, like I said, a week ago. I'd like people, you can't see the detail there. So here's the beds. Now, this side over here are the herbs, okay? So they're perennials for the most part. In fact, I think all of them are perennials. And so they don't have mulch. And then we get over into the vegetables, and we've got most of those with the plastic, some with row cover. Now, again, at this time of the year, there's not as much with row cover as we would earlier in the year. Except for maybe some of what we're learning is you can use some of the lighter row cover for insect control, like on the brassicas, your broccoli and cauliflower kind of thing, to keep the cabbage worms off. And so this piece of ground right here probably is about 3 acres. This is the high tunnel you've been looking at, the 30 by 100. And then this year we put up two more 28 by 200s. And they're a different manufacturer. This is from FarmTech in the United States, and some of you have probably seen that catalog. And these are hay groves out of England. They actually make it and ship it from England, as amazing as that is. But I think Haygrove was kind of like the original manufacturer of high tunnels, going back quite a few years.
I always think of Haygroves as connected, but you put yours up without connecting them?
Yeah, they have the connecting model, but they also have just the standalones. And as compared to this model where it, we use the wiggle wire and the channel to lock it down, this just uses ropes. There's just ropes that go back and forth over it. And so different models. And it took us a couple years to figure these out. 200 feet of plastic will make a great kite. I've learned that the hard way. You can, just by the design of these, you can get more per square, it's cheaper per square foot on the hay groves. These are built more sturdily, so you really have to just, decide what you want. This mechanism has a roll-up side. This side is rolled up a little bit. It's really nice to walk out there and just do the hand crank, and it rolls up the side. These are just pushed up, so you can kind of see it's just friction on those ropes that holds it up. So it's not quite as sophisticated, but you can get more for less with the hay groves. If you start getting to this size, it's a little less expensive. Okay, I think there were a couple other points. What time is it, Cindy? Oh, yeah. Okay, I think I'll stop and see if there's any more questions. Yes? Yeah, drying. I thought I had a slide in there, but we just take that starter greenhouse. We're not starting plants in it any longer. With the shade cloth over it, it stays at about the perfect temperature, not much over 100 degrees, and that seems to be a pretty good temperature for drying most herbs. And we've got these drying racks, so we've created wooden drying racks, and then we also have just tables in there. And it works out to just cut the material, lay it out. We can winnow it through the screens, different sizes of screens, and make sure it's really dry, and then we can bag it and label it, stored away. So Does that answer your question? Because we use the greenhouse for the drying area, for the most part.
Well, then, I guess my next question is, what kind of regulation is there for how herbs, culinary and medicinal herbs are dried? So, I guess my question is, do you need to dry them in a commercial kitchen?
No.
And you don't?
No.
Okay. Are there any regulations on how they're dried? Or do they just need to be processed?
I don't know if there's any regulations on how they're dried. I don't know that there's any regulations on how they're dried. I think there are regulations on making sure that you have some documentable evidence that when you say that this is a dandelion tincture, that you know that it was dandelion that made that tincture. So it becomes a paper trail, it becomes lot numbers, it becomes photographs, whatever method that you can figure out, so that if someone knocks on your door and they say, how do I know that this is really dandelion, you've got some method of saying, yeah, this is a lot number and it's based upon this, and this is based upon this harvest date, and you know, so in other words, just documentation is going to be able to prove that. Yes?
So my daughter's interested in making natural body care products, and do you sell any herbal products that are useful in body care, mice and lavenders? Tips and things like that that are ready for body care products, or are you mostly focused on medicinal?
We have a handful of what we call body care products. Most of them are salves. So we have our arnica, we have a calendula cream, we have a comfrey salve. And are you talking about
more? Sorry, what I meant was you have the raw materials in them. She wants to make lotion bars and lotions.
Oh.
Sell lavender ready to use?
Yeah. Good question.
For essential oils?
We do. We don't manufacture them, but we what we found is that we were using so many different essential oils that we just decided to put the list out there, and now we sell a lot of essential oils. And so we actually... What it boils down to is we can buy in quantity to the point where we can sell essential oils very inexpensively. I buy lemongrass in 5-gallon containers. So, I actually bought a distiller to make my own essential oils at one point, but I just didn't have the time to do it, is what it boiled down to. So I just buy them, but yes, we have a lot of raw materials. We also own a soap business, so any of the materials for soap making. So we have a lot of the shea butters and coconut oils and things like that that people would use in more cosmetic grade type things. And we buy those in 55-gallon drums, a lot of them, so we can get provide those at really inexpensive prices to people. Yes.
I know the Herb House in Laramie is real concerned about some legislation coming down the pike with their as far as having to run analysis on every lot. Is that still a gray thing, or is that actually coming to fruition?
It has come and gone. It was the 26th of June, as I recall, when that became law. It's the real McCoy. But there's an 800-page document that tells you what you have to comply with. I haven't looked at that, but I'm part of a group of people that have tried to figure that out. And really what it boils down to, in my opinion, is that you need to be able to document, and so if someone knocks on your door and says, how do I know this is dandelion, you have, in your own way, because they don't tell you how you have to do it. You don't have to have $1 million mass spectrometer that can analyze the atoms in this dandelion to prove that it's dandelion. If you have a picture of it, if you have some sample of it, if you have a lot number that goes back, or a combination of all those things, or you can organoleptically say it smells, tastes, feels, looks like dandelion, then it probably is dandelion. All of a combination of any of those things is probably going to meet the FDA's requirement, in my opinion.
So far, so good.
In fact, we had the FDA show up right after they could have said, oh, you don't have all this in place, but we're going to close your doors. And they didn't say anything about any of this, interestingly enough. So it's a learning curve for us, and it's a learning curve for them, is the way I look at it.
Does
that the codex?
I don't, not that I know of. It's called something, but I don't think it's called that. Yes.
I grew some calendula and chamomile this year, and it was for fine products, not for consumption. But I was having some issues with flies and certain types of things and flowers. Do you have any problems with that?
You know, I don't know why, but we've had almost no pest problems. Now, I try to be really careful with crop rotation and cleanup of residual material and things like that. So, knock on wood, to this point, we really haven't had much insect pressure at all. But I'm sure at some point we will, you know.
Oh.
Oh.
My only concern with that would be if you're doing, if I was doing an herbal tea production, I wouldn't want, obviously, any insects in the tea that I was selling.
Yeah, you could just say you could have some with protein or some without. Yeah, just turn it into value added. Okay, well, I hope that this was beneficial. I hope you all go out and figure out your little niche in the herbal world.